Disappearing images on Instagram, direct haptic hugs, robotic monkeys, and a funeral dirge for Windows Vista. All that and so much more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by Cashfly at cachefly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1744, recorded Tuesday, April 11th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you what you need to know to get through the day.
Oh, yeah.
In regards to technology. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howe. Although it may be the end of the day for you, so you already got through it. But a lot of you get through the next day with the previous day's TNT.
Right.
And we don't judge.
Right.
It's okay.
We get you through any day.
That's right.
And today, if you're watching today, it's Windows 10 Creators Update Day. If you're watching tomorrow, it was yesterday.
And what a great day it was.
Well, it will immeasurably change your life. And when I say immeasurably, I mean that it will change your life in such a small way you won't even be able to measure it or tell the difference. If you're a gamer, Windows 10 Creators Update will prioritize CPU and GPU resources to reduce background tasks and speed up your experience. And you can start streaming your games from any PC at lower latency than you can with Twitch. Other than that, it's mostly behind-the-scenes updates. Unless you can't wait to get it, Paul Thurrott from Windows Weekly suggests that you see how the upgrade goes and then you wait 2 to 4 weeks and then get the Creators Update on your own schedule.
So don't rush to update right now. See how everybody, see if everyone starts complaining about it and then you're like, whew, I was pretty smart. I didn't do that.
Yeah. I mean, unless you cannot wait.
Yeah.
Get it if you can't wait, if you enjoy being the first one. The anniversary update was sort of a mess. So if you enjoyed that mess, if you thought that was a beautiful mess, go for it. Get it. Go to Thurrott.com and you can see the ways to get it now, the ways to get it later. You can put this off for 4 months.
You can. Maybe you will. And if you do, send us an email, tnt@twit.tv. We want to hear all about that. Apparently, all about it in full detail, please. Cortana, apparently, if you're setting it up from scratch, Cortana will walk you through the setup, including using your voice to do certain things, like setting it all up along the way. That's kind of cool. It's kind of neat. Feels, you know, more or less like you look over the features, it really does kind of feel very incremental.
Yeah.
It feels like almost, because I was reading about this in a few different places where it seems like there were features that initially were going to be included and then ultimately they weren't. So it's almost like the update planned to be bigger than it actually ended up being.
Right. They oversold it.
They oversold it. Or they had big plans. And then, well, I guess those are going into another incremental update somewhere down the line. And so maybe there will be another update that you have to rush out and get. But dynamic lock is another one that I must have missed along the way, where if you walk away from your PC, it'll go ahead and lock for you. I guess internally they were calling it goodbye. What was it? A Windows goodbye.
Oh.
Instead of Windows hello. Anyways, there you go. I'm just trying to boost it up. It's just not working. This is not working. Okay, fine. This is how we feel about Windows 10 Creators Update. Moving on. Another day, another Snapchat feature ported over to Instagram. An update to Instagram Direct brings ephemeral messaging into the app's one-on-one and group messaging functionality, allowing for the sharing of disappearing photos and videos inside the chat threads and outside of the existing bubble up top approach that they had. If you were in Instagram Direct, you would see those bubbles up top. That would kind of signify that those were ephemeral messages. Now it's integrated into the threads. Though an item might disappear after a certain amount of time or a certain number of views, the thread will still kind of show the history that someone had shared that photo or video with you in that thread. And even though you can't tap and view it anymore, it's still kind of there. So you know it existed at one point. You can keep kicking yourself for not, you know, like recording it with mm-hmm. a second device.
Screenshotting it.
Yeah, screenshotting
mm-hmm.
it.
Or recording it with another device.
Yeah,
yes.
That's another way to do it.
So after extensive research and benchmarking of this new Instagram feature, and by benchmarking, I mean sending lots of stupid videos to you mm. and Nate.
Which I appreciate, by the way. Yes. I will always accept stupid videos.
Mm-hmm. And but now no one, you can't show them to anyone nope. else. You have to watch them, you get to watch them twice, two times.
Okay.
That's all you get, like Snapchat. But like you said, they'll be there. You know, I think it's interesting that they've snuck in the back door of disappearing images. Because as a parent, I think Snapchat's disappearing images are a parenting issue to be dealt with, to be talked about. Mm-hmm. Because, you know,
learning experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you are trying to, you know, when you give your children a phone, you should in the beginning, it might be a good idea to look at what they're doing for at least a while until you trust them. And you can't do that with Snapchat. And now you can't do it with Instagram.
Was either. Instagram kind of the platform that you could be like, you know what? I can trust giving Instagram mm-hmm. because it doesn't, oh, never mind. They just rolled it in there.
Right. And a lot of people probably, I mean, you know, most parents, I would say, don't do a technology podcast every day as we do. So they might not know this. You know, they might not know that it's, Instagram was the first social network that I let my children use. And it's a soft platform. And especially like a lot of kids I've noticed, they let all their parents follow them, all their parents' friends, their aunts, their uncles, like everybody's following them. It's, you know, when you're 11 or 12, it's fun. You don't realize that like it is not cool to have your family and friends following you on social media. That mm-hmm. you figure out later. So it is, the direct messages used to be really hidden. A lot of people didn't even know they existed at all. But I think kids use them, and I'm sure they're going to use the disappearing images. Probably 98% of the time, they're going to use them for purely for fun, silly things that they want to do with their friends. But it's just that idea that they can hide things.
That there's a layer that is inaccessible mm-hmm. to you as a parent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the crux of parenting in the modern digital age, I think. And if there were safe havens from that aspect, more and more we're seeing all these services kind of homogenize and become more and more like each other. And ephemeral has been a big thing the past mm-hmm. couple of years. So yeah, it almost seems like that's hitting everywhere. So yeah. I guess we should teach our children not to use social media.
Yeah, good luck with
that's
that.
That's going to work, yeah.
Qualcomm is suing Apple, claiming that the company intentionally limited the performance of the iPhone 7 running Qualcomm chips, and then they tried to cover it up. Qualcomm also attests that Apple breached and mischaracterized agreements. Now, this is less than 3 months after Apple sued Qualcomm over royalties. So, yeah, this is just a messy back and forth between Qualcomm and Apple. What do you think?
Yeah, well, Qualcomm thinks that Apple's lying to regulators, just really kind of going all for it to try and pin, you know, Qualcomm as being kind of the bad guy here. Qualcomm says Apple chose not to use all of the performance of its chips, the capabilities of the performance of its chips. And I mean, the reality is that, I mean, Apple is more important to Qualcomm than probably Qualcomm is to Apple, as we'll talk about later in the show, you know, and has been a very major source of revenue, kind of profit center for Qualcomm along the lines. If they happen to lose Apple for whatever reason, I mean, that just falls apart. And that's a really, obviously, a very big deal for mm-hmm. Qualcomm. So, I don't know. They have to try and push back.
Yeah, I mean, it's really it's not going to end anytime soon. It's going to be that's part of the tech news that really I don't love. You know, these battles that go on forever, but it's important because the stakes are high mm-hmm. and it's a global problem, and you know there are billions of dollars here at stake.
Mm-hmm. Mike Murphy from Quartz is going to join us a little bit later to kind of talk about this, but from kind of a wider scale as far as like dependencies on Apple in general. So we'll talk about that here mm-hmm. in a few.
I have a dependency on Apple.
I know.
My I name can is tell Megan you have and a, you I'm have dependent
a,
on Apple.
You have a problem.
I do.
I know someone.
Okay.
I'll put you in touch. Okay. Google's artificial, his name's Sundar Pichai, and CEO at Google. Google's artificial intelligence is going to make you the Picasso of clip art. AutoDraw is a new site at autodraw.com by Google that gives users a host of drawing tools to roughly sketch out an image to the best of their ability. So if you're not a very good artist, you use this tool to draw out that thing that you're trying to draw. When using the AutoDraw tool, Google's AI will analyze the image being drawn with every stroke that you add and update a series of thumbnail images up at the top that it thinks match the item that's being sketched. If it's what the user wants, they just tap one of those thumbnails and their piece of junk is turned into a piece of art.
I love this. I encourage everyone to go to autodraw.com right now and spend as much time as you have on AutoDraw. Quick Draw is something that they did before. That was old. But autodraw.com, I spent some good time with it. I am not a good artist, and I tweeted it out. You can easily tweet out the images. So Brian's trying it here.
What do you think Brian's
going to draw? A dog?
Hat. Is it a hat? No.
Google thinks it's turtle. A mushroom. It thinks it's pants. It thinks it's a bathtub.
This is a bed. A bed. It's a dog.
It's a
hippopotamus.
Like I said, I know. There's the dog. You see the dogs up? You can see the dogs up top? Oh, a hippo.
Of course it's a hippo.
But it doesn't know it's a hippo, so it's not a good hippo. Maybe that. Do you see it? You can choose up top.
I think you've got the teeth.
It's a good hippo. That was the problem, too. Nathan, like Brian, you are both good artists. So you actually...
No, not a wiener dog.
Yeah.
Not a wiener dog.
So.
Not a boxer, right. Bear. So it takes what you draw and it tries to guess and then gives you shapes and so that you can auto insert those shapes that are drawn better, well, potentially better than what you drew in there.
Well, I think the AI is based on bad artists like myself. that's what I've found. There's some really, so yeah, you save it, you can tweet it out or share it on whatever social media that you have. I went to hashtag AutoDraw on Twitter and found so many pictures of penises. I'm sorry, drawings. But that's what you find there immediately. And Google doesn't recognize it.
It doesn't give you...
Well, it's
it doesn't
like,
give you a fleshed out version of that? No,
it doesn't. Also...
Sorry. That was a bad pun.
It doesn't. But I find that like when I'm just doodling, like sometimes it does look like a penis. Yeah. So I don't know why. It just
what
does.
What were you drawing earlier? Because you were drawing something.
I was drawing a dog.
You're right. It did kind of look like that.
But also it didn't recognize. I also, someone tweeted, tried to draw a picture of a cigarette and it didn't recognize that. It just didn't show. Like, and I tried it too. I tried a very realistic picture of a cigarette and it didn't show that, which is fine, I guess. But then it's like, they're already like, you know, it's like someone was in charge of saying like, hey, we don't want people to be able to draw cigarettes. Like, cigarettes are a part of art. Like, I don't, you know, it's one true. Of those things where you get where like, oh, Google, you're all up in my business making the choices that I want to make myself.
They're protecting us from the better drawn versions of some of these things.
Smoking
we just
is dangerous.
About.
It causes cancer, etc.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't want...
Sometimes
it's like,
you want to draw a cigarette.
Sometimes you want to... Maybe you want to draw a cigarette to say, don't smoke.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. And I had never heard of this. Apparently, this was an extension of another Google, like a related Google service called Quick Draw, where you go to the site, and it's actually kind of fun. It gives you a word. It says, draw a wristwatch, in this case, in under 20 seconds. So you have 20 seconds to draw a wristwatch. You do this six times with six different things. And then they sick their artificial intelligence, their computers on this, to see if it can figure out what you drew to match it up. And, you know, you're trying to make sure that you draw it well enough that their AI can match it. And so they took kind of some of the lessons that they learned out of this experience, this project, and brought it in to AutoDraw. So just another way that AI is making us better at things than we were without it, apparently.
Well, it's making some people. Like, it's not making people who are artists, like Brian or Svetlana, who is a graphic artist. Like, it's not going to make, you know, she's... It's better. It's not as good as what she draws because that is character. It's not artificial intelligence.
Right. Yeah. This really, it seems to be for people who do not consider themselves to be good artists.
Right. If you just wanted to make a poster or something, not a non-smoking poster, but any other poster, some, not a poster.
Some
with
conditions
on
apply.
A new Kickstarter lets you hug your children remotely. Hat tip to The Verge. She pointed me to Parahug, a huggable friend. designed to keep you connected to those who you love most. Peri, that stands for Peribus Huggis, is a battery-powered Bluetooth and Wi-Fi connected stuffed animal with a twin. You take one on your very important business trip and leave one at home with your kid. Then when you hug, the twin hugs back from miles away. It's so for $75, you can be one of the first to have a Peri of your own if they reach their Kickstarter goal. I think this is the future of no one ever touching each other again. It's all going to be haptic responses forever.
Because there's nothing quite like the warm embrace of a robot.
Yeah. No, I guess there's a few things I like about this. A Bluetooth, internet-connected, Wi-Fi-connected toy is... We've just heard so many horror stories about that.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, right.
But, and I just think, to me, it's sort of playing... This is playing on the fears of parents who are just like, I have a job and I have to be away from my child. I can't do it. You can. Someone else can hug your kid. It doesn't have to always be you.
Well, they make the case that, yeah, right, like for years, you know, when the parents leave their children or they go away, and you know, even if you talk on the phone or even if you do a video chat or whatever, there's an element that's missing. It's just kind of weird, and this is a way to kind of bring that connection back. But like, when I think about it, like, it's still a robot that's hugging you. Like, maybe there's some comfort to be thought about, you know, comfort in the idea that when the robot is clenching, you know, its arms around you.
You use the word clench. That doesn't...
Well, I mean, when it's giving you a bear hug, like, it might... I don't know. This is just not the same as a human hug. I guess knowing that somebody is on the other end of the internet making that happen, maybe that makes it a little bit more authentic, but I kind of don't buy it. But we've never been hugged by the para-hug.
Parabus huggis.
So we don't actually know.
We don't know. I know what haptic feedback feels like, and it's not the same as humans.
Yeah, it's not the same as human.
Especially that weird noise. No one makes that noise when you're hugging someone.
No, but my phone does when it vibrates at me, and I don't even like it there. Apparently, you can also share heartbeats. So, like, if you're both hugging at the same time, it will detect heartbeats on both sides, if I read that correctly, and it will, like, you can feel the heartbeat. I don't know.
You can do that.
I appreciate their ideas, but...
That was a feature of the Apple Watch, and no one except for the creepiest people used that.
It was one of the things that you used when you first got it.
I never used it. No.
No?
I think I got sent one, but... Yeah, that was weird.
It was weird.
I don't even like to think about it. I clearly blocked that out of my mind.
Okay, well, apparently, you know, no one in this room is getting the para hug. So if you do, tnt@twit.tv, let us know. Mm-hmm. Up next, Mike Murphy from Quartz will tell us why Apple's free lunch might be coming to a close. But first, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. It's going to make you a better cook or even a cook at all. If you've never cooked before, Blue Apron's a great way to start. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card inside the box. Also, pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. If you spend a lot at restaurants or at high-end grocery chains, you can now spend under $10 per person for a delicious meal. These meals are top-notch, and what's even better is you finish the recipe, and then you look at what you end up with, and it matches the picture. So many times I've made recipes, and then I look at what I end up with, and I'm like, how did I get here? Not with Blue Apron. The recipes turn out fantastic. Not all ingredients are created equal, so it's important to know where your food comes from. Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranches across the U.S. Blue Apron's helping to reduce food waste. You use everything in the recipe. Their freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. And you can customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences. You can actually choose from a variety of new recipes on your own every week, or just let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored Just a few ideas, and actually, we got our box earlier today. We got sweet and sour salmon with bok choy, carrot, and ginger fried rice. Can't wait to make that. We also got mushroom and Swiss cheeseburgers with roasted rosemary potato wedges. Other options, Parmesan crusted chicken with creamy fettuccine and roasted broccoli. There's also baby broccoli and fontina paninis with hard-boiled egg and arugula salad. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/TNT. And I'm telling you, you're going to love it. It's awesome. Tastes good, feels good, and you're creating awesome home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so it's even easier than when you had to do it all on your own. Don't wait. Go to blueapron.com/TNT. Blue Apron's a better way to cook. Apple has enriched many a supplier, and as it's grown in popularity and its sales have skyrocketed, so have manufacturers of hardware and components that support the platform. Mike Murphy from Quartz is here to talk about why riding those coattails may be getting even harder. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing awesome. It's great to get you back here. So first, you say dark days may be ahead for these companies, which sounds very dire. Why is that?
Well, I mean, there seems to be a fair amount of indication that Apple plans to bring more of the internal hardware of the iPhone and maybe other products into its own in-house production facilities. So all of these companies that they've used over the years to source graphics processors, power management chips, all sorts of random internal things that you don't necessarily think about, Apple could be looking to make those themselves as opposed to working with suppliers.
So being dependent on another company's product, always kind of a risky thing. Even if you have a really great relationship, that can last for years until the point that what we're seeing now is that Apple decides, hey, we could do that, and then we don't have to rely on somebody else. So it's obviously a big risk. How do companies like those who might find themselves in this situation, how do they protect themselves from this sort of about face? I mean, they're not going to say no to Apple money all along, but when this happens, it's a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think you can see that in the chart and my story you were just showing. I mean, there isn't necessarily a lot of contingency that you can have. I mean, when Apple comes along and says, we will give you billions of dollars to, you know, sell us these chips or whatever you're selling, you're not going to turn it down. And once that money dries up, because Apple figures out that they can do it themselves, or they want to use someone who's cheaper or different or something like that, you know, you need to have either been in a position where you're tapping up similar companies for, you know, for new business that also need similar products, or you just kind of have to tell your investors there might be some fallow times ahead.
So what's in it for Apple? I mean, is it cost, or is there something more, another reason why they are trying to bring more things in-house?
There could be all kinds of reasons. Cost could definitely be one of them. In terms of vertical integration, that seems to be a thing we're seeing right now. I mean, if you look at Tesla, for example, they're working on pretty much every part of their electric car. They're building the batteries themselves, the charging systems themselves on top of the cars and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, they have a lot of suppliers still, but, you know, it's definitely helping them keep everything consolidated in one factory, which will cut costs down, the potential for supply chain issues. You know, if Apple wants to scale up or scale down one product, they're making everything themselves. They don't have to, you know, reach out to 70 different, you know, retailers and say, okay, well, in 6 months, we're going to need X million of these. Can you do that? And if they say no, it's like, well, there's not an option for them. So this definitely would help that. You know, they could also be looking to just do different things. If something's not exactly on the market what they want right now, it's entirely possible that, you know, they could be working on exactly what they need versus what's on the market.
So you also talk about Foxconn as being one of the companies that Apple's decided to part ways with. Is this something that's going to cause them problems in the future? I mean, I know that Foxconn was a big PR problem for them, and often Apple sort of, you know, said, well, used it as, well, it's not us that's, you know, that's running these factories. What's going to happen in the future for them? Are they going to use a company that's similar to Foxconn, or are they really going to go in-house with all that assembly?
So they're still using Foxconn a fair bit. What happened was that they just, according to Foxconn anyway, what they saw was that Apple was using a wider array of suppliers of labor than they had in the past. And even that sort of thing could you know, massively affected Foxconn's bottom line. But I can't see, even if Apple starts to build these products themselves, or you know, source all the products and make all the parts of it themselves, I still think they're going to rely on some sort of third party to actually do the assembling. Foxconn is one of them. There's other companies called Pegatron, which they use extensively. And I think that they will still use, regardless of where they make it and who is making these products, it's almost certainly going to be one of these big companies that can employ tens of thousands of people working ridiculous shifts in countries where the labor laws are a little, you know, more lax than they are here. And if Apple brings it over here, you know, Foxconn is working on a factory in, I think, Texas or somewhere in the South. They have factories in Brazil and things like that. So it could definitely be the case that even if Apple is sourcing and making every part of this, that they're just going to rely on someone else's workforce to actually assemble it.
Are there other suppliers kind of in Apple's supply chain in other ways? I mean, we talked earlier in the show about Qualcomm and, you know, the Apple's dispute with Qualcomm and vice versa, Qualcomm's dispute with Apple. I mean, are they kind of in these crosshairs as well? Are there other, is it easy to kind of look at the relationships that Apple has right now and be able to point to other manufacturers of components that probably should be making their own plans, so to speak?
Well, I think Samsung would probably be a pretty big one, given that they're one of Apple's biggest suppliers, whether it's in batteries or I think in the past displays. You know, there's a huge rivalry between those two companies when it comes to mobile devices. I don't think we're necessarily going to see something like what's happening with Qualcomm and Apple. But, you know, I mean, if you're both, you know, if you're both your biggest competitor and business partner, it's a very tenuous position to keep being in forever. And I just wonder if that will always be the case. I'd be surprised if it continues as much as it has.
Yeah, right. Okay, so shifting gears entirely, but, you know, it was hard to let this story go. We've seen many times how robots can do the darndest things, but you wrote about something today that has me worried that we might actually be on the cusp of a robot Tarzan at some point. Tell us a little bit about the swinging robots that you have in your article.
So I'm a big fan of random zoological robots, and this one really took me by surprise. I just had to write something silly about it. But basically, this swinging robot here from Georgia Tech uses, depending on which part of this exact video you're listening to, either inspiration from the sloth or a gibbon monkey or ape, as the kind of inspiration for this crazy motion you're seeing, which is not too dissimilar from a kind of drunk monkey trying to swing across a vine or something like that. And it really does seem kind of terrifying, especially when you see it do it on its own here, like when he's not pressing the button and it's just kind of swinging along, trying to figure out how much effort it needs to swing its arm across to get to the next part. And, you know, their stated use for this in the future is crop management, like having this crazy swinging robot looking at crops below it. I don't know why there would be like rope everywhere that would facilitate this, but it does kind of feel like something that you give it enough agency and ability to swing crazily through the trees that we won't see this thing coming when it comes for us.
Also, all those drunk monkeys ought to like do a coding boot camp or something so that they, you know, have a job in the future.
True.
Actually, the most concerning thing about your piece is that the end game here is for them to be solar powered. So that, of course, made me think about the, you know, the robot uprising. And
they'll never die.
Yeah. Like they'll never, with the power of the sun, we can't turn them off. I mean,
we got to turn the sun off, obviously.
Yeah, that's literally what happened in The Matrix, right? They're like, all right, well, they're solar power. Let's blow up the sun, then we'll be fine. And that didn't work so well for humanity. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think maybe just don't build robots like these. Might be easier.
I don't know. I usually enjoy these stories. Usually they're coming from Boston Dynamics, though. So I can't say that I expected something like this coming from not Boston Dynamics, but super cool nonetheless. Mike Murphy, of course, QZ.com. That's Quartz. Where can people follow you online?
I'm on Twitter far too often at MCWM.
Right on. Mike, always a pleasure getting you on. Thank you for taking time tonight.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
It's feedback time. William from New Canaan, Connecticut, had this to say about our discussion yesterday about Twitter and free speech. He wrote, Americans seem to believe in an idea which they call free speech and which many of them interpret as meaning they have a right to say anything they wish. Not so. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. It does not say you can say anything you want, any place you want. Twitter may restrict the speech of their users, but they must resist an attempt by the state to do so. Of course, this is much simpler to talk about in the abstract than to apply in practice.
Yeah. And I mean, Twitter's exercising its right. Like this comes up on the show all the time where it's like people created a service. They should, at least within the lines of reason, be able to determine how their service acts and operates. Thankfully, Twitter has decided to approach their service in the way that they have. And now they're also getting serious about kind of the other side of that. You know, they're kind of on both lines when you're talking about free speech, trying to stay out of it, but then at the same time trying to kind of police it to a point to where people don't feel like they are threatened personally. And they have the freedom to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's the right approach. TNT's fan of the day is Dean Fordham, who emailed us a few pictures showing how his Boba Fett mask that we showed off on the show, I think a couple of weeks ago in this segment, is in fact wearable. There he is, Boba Fetting it out. Dina is also showing how big a fan he is of the Twit Network, wearing a new screensaver shirt, reading Leo's 2004 Technology Almanac from the days of Tech TV, and I can only assume listening to that Ever One CD by some band named Yellow Gold. Good work, sir. Dean, you kind of wrapped it all up. What is that?
That's the bounty hunter code, the Star Wars bounty hunter code.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's important reading for Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Dean Fordham. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it.
And now it is time to play the funeral dirge for Windows Vista. Are you crying or laughing?
I loved Windows Vista. I'm sorry.
You did not. Keep going. Today's Patch Tuesday marks the end of support for Vista. For real. Mainstream support for Vista ended in 2012, but extended support is over as of today. Oh, thank you, Brian. It's for your own good to upgrade at this point, even though, I mean, we can all agree it's tough for any of us to lose an old friend. Windows Vista.
Windows Vista.
Extra points to anyone in the chat room who can tell me the code name of Windows Vista.
Oh, I know. It's in here.
You're not in the chat room.
Okay, I won't say it.
You can also tweet at me at Megan Maroney if you remember the code name. Also, Kevin wanted to add... Hasta la vista.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And he is not a dad, so you can't call that a dad joke. Thank you,
nope, it's
RGB.
Just a pun or a bad joke. It's not a dad joke, it's a bad joke.
Yeah. And RGB for the win. It was Longhorn.
Good work. Mm-hmm. Longhorn it is. Longhorn is the code name. There are still some things that kind of survived out of Vista, right? Like Vista was aimed to be the new Windows with a new look, a new feel. You know, it had that, what was it, Aero Glass as the kind of visual.
A-E-R-O?
Yeah.
Yes, I remember that.
As the visual kind of element of it. And, you know, I think absolutely some of this stuff kind of survived and moved on and evolved, definitely evolved from Vista and into what you see now with Windows 10 and, you know, the versions that came after it. But, man, people love to hate Windows Vista. I never actually really used it. I was working at CNET at the time, and there was Vista loaded on a couple of machines that we used in the production department area that I worked in, but I had very little interaction with it. I just knew that everybody hated it, so I never wanted to use it, so therefore I never did because I didn't have it at home.
I had a lot more interaction with it than I wanted as I was working freelance on the marketing team for Windows Vista.
So you had to know it.
I had to know it and love it and say all the good things about it that I said that you can find online, not under my name, thankfully, because I'm not on my lines there. It was fine. And so was Windows 7 and so is Windows 10. They're fine.
Windows 10 is probably a lot of people would say that Windows 10 is a lot better than fine.
They might. I mean, people would say Vista is better than fine, too.
Yeah. That's true.
Windows XP SP3, though, that was where at.
SP3 was awesome. Preach. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter. We're at Tech News Today TV.
Find all the ways to subscribe to our show at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
Ooh, Beatmaster in chat says, Vista helped Apple sell more Macs than the iPhones did, I think. Mm-hmm. You could be right. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to Brian Burnett for being our technical director du jour. Thanks to Kara for scrolling words and helping out here in the studio. Right there. See? She's there. She's caught on camera. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show, as always. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody. Woo.